Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 84.
84. Does that mean this episode is double plus good?
It might.
Apologies to George Orwell.
Yeah. It is episode 84. I am your host, Andrew, and as always, I am joined by my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And we are here to bring you some exciting news from the world of family gaming. Hey!
Woo!
We are going to talk about something we talked about last year in honor of Valentine's Day.
Recently passed, yes.
Valentine's Day has recently passed, ladies and gentlemen. Let's have a moment of silence for Valentine's Day. Anyway, in honor of Valentine's Day last week, we are going to revisit something we talked about last year, which is games for two players.
Yeah.
And for us, we kind of made a list of games that we really enjoy playing two-player, and a lot of them are two-player games,
yeah.
Unsurprisingly.
Some of them are suitable for more players, but we enjoy playing them with two players.
Right, exactly. So that's what we're going to talk about in the second half of the show. But as always, for the first half of the show, we're going to talk about what we have been playing.
Yeah. Since our last show, we've had a couple of snow days,
mm-hmm.
and the kids have pulled out a lot of games.
Yeah, by the way, can I just say that now that we're, you know, hardcore into the board games with the kids, I am so much more jealous of snow days. Because I'm down here working, and you get to play board games.
Oh, don't worry. I get to be jealous of the snow day, too, because I'm out there shoveling or using the snowblower, and they're inside playing board games.
Wow.
Such is the life of being a parent. I did get pulled into a couple. They pulled me in for a quick game of Brew Dice,
mm-hmm.
and our three-year-old is still driving plays of Silly Street. And Zitternix, which I will never say no to Zitternix because it's a 5-minute game.
Sure.
And he got me to play Corridor with him, which was interesting.
Yeah, I find that to be fascinating. How did he do? Not well, I assume.
Not well. No. Not well at all.
No.
The bigger kids pulled out and got to show me how to play a game I bought a little while back called Goblet Gobblers.
Yeah, so I saw that you had posted a picture of playing this game on our Instagram feed,
yeah.
and we got a little bit of feedback about that.
So. Yeah, it's a cute little take on Tic-Tac-Toe published by Blue Orange.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cross between Tic-Tac-Toe and a game called Goblet. So Goblet Gobblers is a two-player game. Ha! sorry. Little moment there. It's a two-player game where... It basically plays like tic-tac-toe, except the pieces you have to play come in three different sizes. And you can always put a larger piece on top of a smaller piece, or move a larger piece off from being on top of a smaller piece. So it definitely makes tic-tac-toe way more strategic, but still keeps it at a very light, accessible level for mm-hmm. like a 5-year-old.
Sure.
So that's about all I have to say about it. It's really simple.
Okay, cool. We had somebody over last week and we played a game that we haven't played in a while.
Yes.
Which was Smash Up.
Yes. I love Smash Up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I especially like it at about that 3-player range. Like, we've played it with 4 or 5. I think we've even played it with 6 players once. And it gets really unwieldy. There's just way too much going on. You've got to wait a long time between turns. So 3 players is great.
Yeah, you know, I, one of the things I like about Smash Up is that it really is an area control game that has
yes.
absolutely no navigation components to it.
Yeah.
Right? So unlike a game like, I don't know, Kingdom Builder or something where you're trying to kind of extend this border that you have to control areas.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just kind of like... dropping in.
You just kind of decide where you want to drop your guys. Yeah,
there's no...
There's a few restrictions here and there. We had a base when we played that was no minions, that's the name of it. No minions can be played on this base. So you
right.
could only play them elsewhere and then use special powers to move them to that
sure.
base.
But I mean, you think about that in contrast of a game like Viral, where if you want to move around on the board or anything, I mean, there's... there's defined navigation paths that you have to use in a game like
and
Viral.
There's nothing like that.
I don't know. It's just something that's unique, I guess, to Smash Up in that there isn't, like, I guess it's because there's not a central board, and so there is no sense of relative positioning. I don't know, but it's still an area control game. I'm not sure. Anyway, I love that, and as always, I like the Russian Bear Cavalry. They're my boo.
I got to play with the new sheep deck, which I definitely enjoyed. The sheep deck was a lot of fun.
Oh, the black sheep is so annoying.
Oh, especially when you combine the black sheep with a flock. Oh. So the black sheep, anytime you play a different minion where the black sheep is, they have to move. The black sheep has to move away because they don't like being with people. But then there's another card called Flock. And Flock is if any of your minions move away from Flock, Flock goes with them. So you guys would keep playing cards and then be like, oh, well, the black sheep has to move somewhere and the flock's going to go with it.
And of course, because I'm unable to think three turns ahead in my brain, I always have this elaborate scheme put together and then I do something and you're like, oh, and the black sheep moves. I'm like, stop it. But
I'm definitely going to play with the sheep deck again in the future.
Yeah, I mean, Smash Up is a fun game because you can really mold it to different people's interests.
Yes, right? Definitely.
So I like that a lot.
We got to play Grim Forest again.
Oh, that game is so pretty.
Still definitely enjoying that game a lot. I got to try out a new game with the kids called Dino Mals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a game that just finished fulfillment on Kickstarter.
Yep.
This game, cool story, was designed by a guy and his daughter.
Yeah, and it kind of shows...
Like, child daughter.
Yes. It kind of shows in the artwork and also in the concept of the game. You're smooshing together dinosaurs with animals to make these weird hybrid creatures. They're all really cute. My biggest complaint is you could only do predefined dinosaur animal combos.
Okay.
So it was not, it could be a lot more strategic, but as it is, it's really just a set collection game, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, our kids enjoyed it fine.
Cool.
And we also, you and I played a 7x7 grid game of King Domino.
Which is awesome, and we're going to talk about that later.
We will talk about that more in our two-player topic.
Sure. I also, it's not even on our list, but I have been playing, on Board Game Arena, I have been playing a lot of Keyflower.
So I've heard of Keyflower, but I don't know much about it.
Keyflower is, I guess it's kind of like tile control. I don't know. So you have a town. Everybody has their own town. And you have these tiles that are kind of publicly available. And you have a certain set of meeples that you draw from a bag secretly.
Okay.
And you can use those meeples to either bid on the tiles or put them on the tiles to use whatever is on the tile.
The stuff.
Yep. And once you put a color on a tile, it's locked in.
Okay.
So whether you're bidding on it or people are playing on it to use the ability, they have to use that color.
They have to use the same color. Interesting.
In order to make a subsequent bid or to make a subsequent play, you have to at least exceed the existing meeple count by one. So if I play on something with one meeple, one red meeple, you have to play on it with two red meeples.
And then the next person would have to play with what, four?
Three red meeples.
Okay.
Yeah, so you have to. So it's one, two, three.
Gotcha.
And then obviously the bidding happens the same way. So and then at the end of the round, whoever wins the bid on each of the tiles gets to take them into their town. Any meeples that have been played on them get to go into their reserve. And then they've got all the stuff in their town. And then for the rest of the game, anybody can still play on the things that are in their towns, but those meeples are going to go to that owner.
Okay.
And so there's a bunch of different things that these tiles do. They create resources, they generate resources, they have different victory point threshold. You could get a tile in and then you could pay to upgrade that tile. And then it's just like, this tile's worth 7 victory points at the end of the game, you know, stuff like that.
Sure.
And then there's a bunch of tiles that'll say things like, you know, you get 1 victory point for every resource that you have on this at the end of the game, or if you upgrade it, it's 2 victory points for every resource you have on the, you know, and then there's tiles that say you get X number of victory points for iron that you have on this,
okay.
as opposed to whatever. And so there's a lot of other different things kind of around that, but it becomes this sort of tile laying management, resource management game. It's really cool. And
sounds neat.
There's a lot of different potential strategies to the game, which make it really, really interesting. Keyflower was the first of, I don't know, there's three or four, I think, of these different kinds of games that are kind of in that same genre, not genre, but in that same kind of family. And it's really neat, and you can play it on Board Game Arena for free. So, sure. I think it's pretty cool.
I might take a look at that on Board Game Arena. Mm-hmm. One quick note in video games. Our daughter finally beat Zelda Wind Waker. So we have allowed her to start playing Breath of the Wild. She is loving it.
Oh, she is. So, true confession, I told her that she had to beat Wind Waker before she could play Breath of the Wild because I wanted to be playing Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And it worked. It delayed her playing Breath of the Wild until I was mostly done with it. So,
well, you are done with it. Now you're just doing the bonus content
the DLC
when you feel
stuff.
Like,
yep.
When you feel like sitting down and playing it.
Yeah, that's true.
I find it funny that so far one of her favorite things about the game is the horse training.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got three horses already.
And they're all the same.
They're all named Epona.
Well, I mean, if she's going to pick one name to name all of her horses, I think it's the right name.
Sure.
Yep.
I'm like, how do you know which Epona you have? She's like, well, I look at the stats.
Perfectly. Like, right. Who cares? Honestly, I mean, if you've played the game, who cares what their name is? Who cares how you differentiate them? You pick the one based on the stats anyway.
Fair. One last thing. We did something this weekend that is not game related, but was really cool.
We did. So it's super late on Sunday night as we're recording this because we got home a little bit late from the New Hampshire Ice Castles.
Yeah. So this was, we had to buy tickets in advance. We surprised the kids and basically said, make sure you have your, you know, your snow pants and your coats and stuff and plan on being gone all day.
Mm-hmm.
So we drove up to New Hampshire. We went to this ice castle place. It was really cool, both figuratively and literally.
So what this is... basically, this isn't the first. I think this company has three or four
some
or five different locations
thing
across
now,
the country. They've got some system where they basically build an ice castle.
Yes.
And they do it. It looks like they're doing it with some kind of water jet system.
Yeah.
Based on the, you know, the stalactites that were, you know,
that we could see.
That were, you know, visible. And so. It's basically this pretty large area, and when you drive around it, it looks pretty small. Like, I kind of in the back of my head as we were driving in, I was like, that's it, huh?
Well, if you were thinking of it like a building, it would look like a relatively small building. But it's actually more of like a courtyard kind of feel.
Well, it would be like two or three nested courtyards kind of thing. And so what they've done is they've built obviously the walls around this whole thing, and then they've built a lot of kind of inner areas and inner walls. There's a lot of ledges, there's a lot of tunnels that go through the walls, which obviously the kids love.
Most of the tunnels have slides involved.
Yep. There's one or two like really big slides that you could tell they had some kind of block arrangement that they used to create this very square like tunnel for sliding on, and then they embedded lights in a lot of the stuff, which is pretty neat.
They embedded lights in a bunch of different areas, and so they used the same couple of techniques to create several very different feels. There was a fountain,
mm-hmm.
Which was all surrounded with ice, but also lit up and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, that I'd love to see it at night, but, we were
it was
kinda,
cold.
We were done by then. There are some areas that you can walk through that have ceilings to them as well. And I got some really neat pictures. We'll try to throw a couple pictures in the show post.
So one that you didn't see is the area that was a very small tunnel that mostly kids were crawling through. I was just kind of watching kids go in and out of there for a while. I was like, okay, whatever. And then our youngest son was like, Mom, come with me. I was like, am I going to fit? And then I realized I saw inside some people's legs just from the knee down. So I knew they were standing up inside. I thought it was tiny. So we crawl in and I get in and it's this big room-like cave. I mean, big. Probably four people could stand up in it and feel comfortable. And it had a window. There was a window to the quote-unquote outside where the ice was a whole lot thinner and it was square and it looked cool. I thought it was cool the way it was set up. Mm. And then it was the second time I was in there that I was like, hey, wait a minute, there's a square window here. It's really neat.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fun experience. It's the kind of thing that I don't feel particularly driven to go back to, certainly not next year or anything. Maybe,
no.
maybe 5 years down the line or something like that.
I mean, it was fun. They definitely know their audience well, because in addition to the, you know, pseudo natural man-made ice stuff, there was also non-copyright infringing,
totally non-copyright infringement, random ice princesses that happen to be dressed exactly like other ice princesses,
and a magical snowman,
yes, with pink boots.
But those added a little bit of extra interest for children who are just coming in here and being like, what is this place?
Yeah. I mean, it was just cool.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, because the inside walls, it's not like they were smooth so that it looked like the inside walls of a place. I mean, everything looked like icicles.
The only places where inside walls were smooth were the little man-made cave slide type areas. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they must have some kind of box that they put. You know, they let stuff freeze over and then they collapse something.
I'm sure, but they do.
Whatever. I mean, it was cool. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, I think the kids had a blast. I think it was $17 an adult and $13 a kid or something like that to get in.
I think it was more fun for our big kids than for the littler kids. But I think the littler kids still had fun with the little slides.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I got some good action shots.
Yeah.
So that was the Ice Castles up in New Hampshire. If you Google New Hampshire Ice Castles, that'll come up.
Yeah, they're not going to be around a whole lot longer, though, because someday soon, warm weather is coming, and the ice will all melt.
We're going to have 70-degree temperatures in like 3 days, which is kind of weird.
I am so looking forward to it. It's going to be the best February break ever, without going anywhere.
Right. We do have some news this week. We don't always have news that we want to bring and share with you, but there were a few things that happened in this last week that are kind of, I think, noteworthy.
Yeah, in the world of gaming.
The first one is actually a little sad, I think.
Both a little sad.
Yeah. So Mayfair Games, who's been around for, I don't know, like 50 years or something. A long time. They've been around for a long time.
I mean, they're the Settlers of Catan people. Well, they were until like 2 years ago.
Right. Which they sold that to Asmodee. And then Asmodee, the gelatinous cube of board gaming, has consumed yet another company, and Mayfair has decided to stop publishing board games and has sold the rights to all of their games to Asmodee.
Yeah.
So, all those games that you know and love, Lookout Spiel, all the, so that would be like Baron Park and Patchwork, and basically everything by Uwe Rosenberg, I guess. they're all going to be published by Asmodee now.
Everything by Lookout and everything by Mayfair is now under Asmodee. So,
well, Lookout is a developer under Mayfair, the publisher.
Sure. In any case, it's all going to be Asmodee now, which, you know, is a little sad, but hopefully Asmodee will do a good job with keeping stuff available that Mayfair has not been doing so great with.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. A lot of people are super frustrated that they can't get their hands on a game like Baron Park.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you kind of always root for the little guy, or at least I do. So it's a little bit sad to see, especially a stalwart of the board gaming industry, you know, go down in flames. So,
unfortunately, in similar news, our other thing is that Barnes & Noble is closing a whole lot of their stores. And they've basically laid off most of their full-time employees.
Yeah,
across all of their stores.
This is crazy. So they announced that they were going to close something like 120 stores or something across the country. And then just this week, all the head cashiers and the digital product specialists, so all the Nook people,
the shipping and receiving. The
shipping and receiving full-timers, they all came into work, were called into the manager's office, and left with all their stuff 15 minutes later. No warning, no nothing.
Yeah. And this has got to be that somebody high up at Barnes & Noble has decided that it's not worth it to really try to save their business anymore, and they're just trying to pull whatever cash out
there. I don't want to make any kind of
if you're letting go, you know, all or almost all of your full-time store employees, that means you don't care about customer service. You don't really care about getting the stuff out on the shelves anymore. And it's definitely not a good long-term strategy.
I would agree with it not being a long-term strategy. I just don't want to put words in people's mouths.
Fair.
I mean, you could say actions speak louder than words and these kinds of things. I think that it's certainly a sign of desperation.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, I think it's really unfortunate. I mean, this is the trend that we saw really across the country with the Great Recession, was a lot of full-time people lost their jobs and were replaced with part-timers.
Well, and, you know, in a retail way, this move is very similar to what happened at all the Circuit City stores near the end. All the full-timers go, they keep part-timers on for a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll see. You know, I mean, there's not a whole lot that we can do about it. We knew that Barnes & Noble was going to be shrinking their board game sections anyway, which is a bummer for us. We'll reach out to our contacts there, because, obviously, if they're firing a lot of their full-time employees, the folks that we work with for the game nights may be on that list.
Yeah,
I don't know.
See.
So we'll try to get a little bit more information about that. But keep an eye on your local Barnes & Noble. That clearance table might get a whole lot bigger real soon.
It might. We'll see what happens. Are you ready for a break?
I think so.
I'm ready.
I think
for
it's
a
time
break.
For a break. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk about games to play with two players. This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com.
Honey, I love you.
Oh, I love you too, honey.
I also love playing games with you.
Tell me about it.
You know, as the listeners to our show, I'm sure
are familiar.
You play
games with me all the time.
Not like that.
Oh, my bad.
No, I like playing board games and video games with you.
Oh, okay. Well, I like playing board games and video games with me too.
I'm going to smack you now.
I'm kidding.
You are not making this any easier for me.
I but somebody out there is laughing. You're laughing.
Laughing and sighing at the same time. All right.
I like playing board games with you as well. It is fun.
So we're going to talk about games that we like to play together. Sometimes games that we just play with one child.
Mm-hmm. That happens too.
Also two player. Yep. Yeah.
So we kind of took stock of our gaming inventory and made a couple of lists of the kinds of games that we like to play with each other or with, like you said, one kid. And I think our lists probably have some slightly different games on them.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I will let you go first.
Okay. Well, I thought I would talk a little bit about, like, the benefits of two-player games.
Sure.
Because if you're always playing with multiple kids or, you know, in a group game night kind of thing, you may forget what two-player games are like.
Mm-hmm.
Two-player games tend to be tight, and you know you stay involved the whole time because it's not a lot of waiting around,
right?
And they pretty much always involve to some degree trying to get into the other person's head.
I mean, I would say with a two-player game, you're definitely playing off of the other player a lot more than in a three or four or five-player game where you really need to maintain your own strategy a little bit more, and you know, player interaction is a little bit more incidental.
Yeah, well,
not a lot more incidental.
It depends on the game. I think a great example of a game where the gameplay is the same, but the strategy changes is Ancestry, which we've mentioned in the past.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing with three players, everybody's kind of got the same involvement with everybody else. If you're playing with four to six players, you really only care about the people on either side of you.
Right.
if you're playing two players, you are definitely very invested in making sure the other person does not take the tiles you want.
Right. Sure.
And all of your dynasties are worth twice as much. So I was going to say it becomes a different game, but it's not really a different game. It just, the emphasis shifts.
Right. Sure.
But, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. So, two-player games.
Well, why don't we open up talking about two-player games with the game that we played tonight?
Sure.
We played King Domino with the 7x7 grid variant, which means that a two-player game still uses all of the tiles.
Yes. And it means that the game takes a little longer, more like your standard 3 or 4 player right. game.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still only like a 15-minute game. the 7x7 idea, I could not wrap my head around it effectively.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, the 5x5 grid is just small enough that I can kind of hold it in my head and see what's going where. And the 7x7 grid, I could not do that. I kept making mistakes.
See, and I mean, I thought that was interesting because it really didn't make a whole lot of a difference for me. Right. But when I play King Domino, I'm not really looking at the entire grid per se. I'm looking more at the different types of terrain and how they're connected to each other.
Sure.
And the only thing that's really important from a grid perspective is whether or not you're going to be losing a corner square.
Right. Which I ended up doing.
Just maintaining that odd even balance. I guess because of that, because I'm not trying to keep an entire 7x7, 49 square grid in my head.
Yeah.
It just kind of makes it a lot easier.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think with more practice, I'd probably do better at the 7x7. But yeah, I tend to look at it a little bit as a whole once I've got 3 or 4 tiles out there to kind of figure out how I want to plan out my strategy.
Okay.
So that did not work this time. I don't think I did poorly, but I definitely could have done a lot better.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, King Domino is a great game. Right.
It's a great game.
It's a fantastic game at 3 players, at 4 players, and we really like it at 2 players too. I mean, yeah. I actually like that it makes what is ostensibly a relatively light game a little bit deeper just by adding more pieces to it, basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, big fan of King Domino 7x7. The next game I'm going to talk about is a game that you actually haven't played.
Okay.
So this is Gruff. I think I've mentioned it a couple times on the show. But Gruff is a game that is done by Studio Wo, Brent Critchfield's company, and it's really weird. So you play as a shepherd, and you are shepherding descendants of the 3 billy goats Gruff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're these really strange, bizarre animals. We were talking about this a little while ago, and I was trying to figure out what it reminded me of. And it's almost like Magic the Gathering crossed with Garbage Pail Kids. If you remember Garbage Pail Kids, like it's a really just they're kind of gross, but it's not awful. I don't know. They're just really weird.
It's not over the top gross. It's just kind of enough to make you go,
Yeah, yeah. And so the gameplay mechanics remind me a lot of a Magic style game, right? So it's a 2-person head-to-head game where the neat thing about this game is that you've got 3 slots, 1 slot for each of your Gruffs, and your Gruffs can move back and forth horizontally depending on what's going on. But there's clips on basically every card. And these clips basically move along indicator tracks. So as the game goes on, your Gruffs become more powerful and your Shepherd becomes more powerful. And you can cast bigger and better spells. And there's a lot more impact to the battles that happen, right? And so it's a really neat game to sort of capture the natural crescendo of a game moving on. And sort of upping the ante a little bit as you move along. And so it's got this weird kind of balance to it that really makes it hard to just crush your opponent. And like, if you have the right strategy in a game like Magic,
which is
a complete CCG, you can just crush your opponent and there's really nothing they can do about it. Gruff is definitely built to be a back and forth kind of balanced game in that way. And so in some ways it can be a little bit frustrating, but it's really neat. It's basically an LCG. So similar to something like Smash Up where you have factions, you choose the gruffs and the shepherds that you're going to use. And then you have to pick a certain number of cards out of each gruff has their own like mini deck.
Okay.
And so you pick a certain number of cards out of each one of those, and then you shuffle those three mini decks together, and that becomes the deck that you play with.
Gotcha.
But it's really a cool game, and Claire really, really kind of grabbed onto it and liked it and understood the mechanics of it, which I thought was really, yeah,
really
cool.
It's been a really sweet game for the two of you to play together.
Mm-hmm.
It's been kind of a special father-daughter thing.
Yeah, and there's an expansion that I'm not sure if it's finished Kickstarter fulfillment yet, called Rage of the Trolls. And that actually has sort of these trolls that have sort of an AI to them that allow you to play single player. And so you're trying to fight this troll, or you can play multiplayer co-op against a troll. And so that's kind of a neat little twist on the game. And that's going to be, if it's not already available, it should be available very soon. But that is Gruff from Studio Woe. All
right. Well, I'm going to mention one of our now perennial favorites, Jaipur.
Jaipur is a fantastic game.
We mentioned this a year ago in our last two-player episode. It's just so well balanced with two players. It's great. You and I started playing the iOS app a lot a couple months ago.
Oh, I beat it.
Which I think has improved our respective strategies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those weird abstract games where it's... I mean, the idea is that you are... merchants, traders in the Middle East.
You're trying to prove to the emperor?
Sultan, maybe? I don't know.
Whatever, the Maharaja, that you're the best merchant.
Yeah.
And so you want to become the official merchant of the Maharaja.
Yeah. So you're trying to snatch up the most valuable goods.
Yeah. I mean, they have this really cool camel dynamic in the game, right?
Yes.
So... basically the way the game is manifest, it's sort of a set collection game where, you're bouncing in and out of this common pile of cards until you have an appropriate set that you can play to draw these tokens, and the tokens have hidden values on the backs. And then at the end of the round, whenever three of the token stacks are gone, the round ends and whoever has the most points wins the round.
It's got a combination of set collection and press your luck, because if you can turn in more cards, you'll get something more valuable. But that's assuming that that you don't wait too long and the other person grabs them instead.
Right. Yep, absolutely. Yep. So, that is Jaipur. That is a good game.
Yeah. So a year ago, one of our favorite two-player games was Patchwork. That has totally been supplanted by Baron Park.
Yeah, it really has.
We still have Patchwork, and it's a good game. And it's got more randomness to it than Baron Park does. But we just always reach for Baron Park now.
Yeah. And I mean, the nice thing about Baron Park is that it scales, right? So you can play four-player Baron Park. You can play two-player Baron Park. I would just say head over to thefamilygamers.com. We have a full written review with lots of awesome bear puns. On the Family Gamers that you can check out. We absolutely adore this game. I know it's difficult to find right now. I strongly suspect that once this whole Asmodee Mayfair thing gets worked out, that is a game that a lot of people are clamoring for, and I'm sure we'll come back into print.
And
also, as a random aside, I have a cold that I'm recovering from, so I apologize that I sound weird.
I was just going to say, Baron Park is one of the games we made a board game Valentine out of. So it says, I love you very much.
We should have mentioned that. So we I hope that you saw them on Valentine's Day. We put out something on the order of 12 to 15 board game themed Valentines on our Facebook page. There's a whole album of them on there that are publicly 14. Available. And then if you go to thefamilygamers.com/Valentines.
Yep, they are all available there. In a big old list.
Yep. So grab them and save them for next year.
Or just come to thefamilygamers.com/Valentine's next year. hopefully before Valentine's Day, to show the board gamers in your life how much you love them.
Aww.
And board games.
And board games. So the next game on our list that I'm going to mention is a game that that we talked about last year. So right around a little bit after Valentine's Day in March, we had Spencer and Lara from Married with Board Games on the show. And we talked about two-player games then. And they recommended to us Potion Explosion from CMON.
Oh, man. It was such a good recommendation.
Yeah, it was. So we bought it on their recommendation. And that game is awesome.
We started with it on iOS just to kind of dip our toes in. And then we bought the full board game as well. Because mm-hmm. either way, it is a great game. And the iOS app is actually one that our 7-year-old son now plays whenever he gets the chance, because he loves the game.
Yep, it's excellent. We have not picked up the expansion yet.
No, and the kids have started bugging us about that. So like, when are we going to get the expansion? Come on, we want the fifth ingredient.
I think we should make them come up with half the money out of their allowance.
Ooh, we'll man, that's rough.
That's not rough.
I mean, it's not that rough, but...
Half?
Especially if the two of them pool their money.
Yeah.
For it. All right.
Shouldn't be so bad.
Fair enough.
All right, awesome.
Make them work for those games. So we've talked plenty about Potion Explosion. Another great one that we've discovered in the last year is Onitama.
Oh, I love this game. We've talked about this a lot
over the last couple of months, and we have a full review of Onitama on our website as well. It is one of the most
chill, zen,
relaxing. Kind of. It all fits together very well, and it is competitive, but it doesn't feel like cutthroat competitive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just excellent presentation. Is that kind of what you're going at?
Because everything fits together well.
Yeah, we talk a lot about giant boxes with no components, and this it's so well packed together. I mean, the entire experience of opening this game up. And taking the rollout and setting up the 10 pieces, only 10 pieces.
Yeah.
Pulling out.
And you only use five movement cards at a time.
I mean, it's just a very graceful experience. I don't know how else to explain it.
There's not good words for it, except it's very enjoyable. And it's not, it doesn't feel high stakes like some two-player games can.
Mm-hmm. So, next game I'm going to mention is a game that that also scratches that Magic the Gathering itch for me, and that is Fight for Olympus. So this is a game, again, that we have a review for on the site. This is a Mayfair title, so who mm-hmm. knows what's going to happen with it. But Fight for Olympus is this game where one of the gods from Mount Olympus has died, and you are vying to become the next god. And... It scratches that itch for me because mechanically it's very similar.
It's got some similarities. You can have multiple cards out at a time. Unlike Magic the Gathering, you can choose if the cards you're putting out are directly fighting other people or not. I mean, sort of.
Yeah, well, you play cards back and forth. You play cards into slots.
There's 7 slots along the board for each person.
Yep, and if there's a... If there's a,
opposing card there, then you're fighting. Then
you fight them, right? The difference between this and something like Gruff is a much more, it's a much deeper game mechanically. Like there's a lot, it's a lot more thinky. Sure. There's a lot more going on. Fight for Olympus is a little bit more casual.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, you're using the cards in your hand, you're always making decisions, am I using this card as the... the resources to spend to put a different card down, or is it more valuable to me to hang on to that and have to discard other cards to put it down? I love the Fight for Olympus point system, that it's not about someone gets to a certain number of points or someone, loses all their life. Instead, it swings back and forth
it's like
between
a seesaw.
The two of you. Yeah.
Yeah. Twilight Struggle is a similar kind of thing. And it's not even, that's not the only way that you can win or lose.
True.
Right. So if you start a round and all of your slots are already filled with creatures, you automatically win. If the shared deck runs out, then everybody loses.
You both automatically lose. Yeah.
Right. So I like the game because it's like a 2-minute setup. Yeah. Like, I love playing Gruff, but you're committing time to it.
Yeah.
Because you've got to pick your Gruffs, and then you've got to, you know, root through and figure out what cards you're sideboarding, and you've got to put all the clips in the right places and all this kind of stuff, which, when you're talking about an experience that you're having with your child, I mean, sometimes that's good.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to kind of go through all that stuff and you know, that tactile experience.
But I know you and Maid, like,
if you just want to sit down and play a game.
If we're going to play a game, just the two of us, we just want to sit down and start playing right away.
Right. And that's one of those things I really like about Fight for Olympus. It's super easy. Got a thin board track. You throw that down. It's a shared deck of cards.
You draw some cards, and then you're ready. You put
five tokens on the board, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
So I really like that game, Fight for Olympus, from Mayfair / Asmodee.
Yep. another one.
You just caught what I said, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Another one that I was going to mention is Pocket Ops, which I'm sure we mentioned back when it was on Kickstarter, I think.
Yep. And we've mentioned it since then.
Yeah. It's a cute little take on tic-tac-toe that makes it way more strategic. So much more strategic. You are taking turns. You're placing your pieces on the 3x3 grid, but you're also, each time the other person gets to guess where you're going to place. And if the person guesses correctly, you don't get to go that turn.
Right.
So it way more back and forth. They also add in some special powers, which can definitely throw the game one way or the other.
Right.
But the idea is you're not always going to use the same special powers. So,
well, not only that, but you can't even choose your special powers.
Yeah,
right?
you're supposed to pick them randomly.
Yep.
But that is a great, you know, throw in a bag, throw in a pocket, bring it somewhere. And again, it's 1 minute setup and, you know, probably only about 5 minutes to play around of it, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to mention a game that's not even on our list, which is a game that we're working on a review for, which is Cave versus Cave, also from Mayfair / Asmodee. This is the two-player version of Caverna. I like this game a little bit better than Agricola, All Creatures Big and Small.
See, I think I like Agricola better, but I do see the appeal of the Caverna.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly theme.
Yeah.
But there's a few little mechanical differences. I like the way that the turn-taking track is used in Caverna. I like the digging out of the caves and the whole, you know, all that stuff. I remember when we were in Disney, we were going through the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. And we go through a lot of the outdoor loop-de-loop stuff, and then we go underneath, and you see the dwarves mining the gems, and I was like, it's cave versus cave! Ah! I really like that game. We need to play that game more.
Yes,
that is
do.
A two-player game.
That is, yeah. So, Caverna is not, but Caverna Cave versus Cave is literally only two players, and yeah, we need to play it a whole bunch more because we have barely scratched the surface on it. Ha.
Har.
We need to mine its depths.
Yes, we need to dig deep.
We're setting up the puns now for when we do a review.
It's so bad.
Let's see, we got any more? I know one of your favorites that we haven't mentioned yet.
Baseball Highlights 2045.
That's
one? Oh, I love this game. So
this is you. This is for bro dates.
Yeah, it kind of is. So Baseball Highlights 2045 is a really interesting game. It takes place obviously in the future, and there are naturals, cyborgs, and robots.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a card drafting / deck build. Well, not card drafting. I lied. It's a deck building game. So everybody starts off with more or less the same basic deck. And as the game goes on, you get money based on what's available on the card, and you can use that to, quote, buy these other players, and then you have to, you know, get rid of some of your, you know, crappy rookie cards. And then you play a game versus your opponent, and then you kind of go back and forth. But you're playing a game of baseball.
Yeah.
Right? And your cards have hits or defensive things on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you play back and forth, You would play a card. It would queue up your hits. Then your opponent would play a card that might have some defensive stuff on it that could affect your hits. Sometimes you take hits away. Sometimes, you take runners off base. Things or your hits become walks. Things like this.
Sure.
But then also that same card might have hits on it as well. And so you're kind of playing back and forth over the course of a 9-inning game, and runs are scored, and, you know, all the regular baseball scoring stuff happens. So as a baseball nerd, I really like it. As a nerd, I really like it. And as a board game fan, I really like it. So Baseball Highlights 2045 does it for me.
Yeah. Works in a lot of ways for you. Any others we want to mention?
I think I'm good. I talked a lot.
I'll give a quick shout out to Okie Dokie, which is a cooperative game that we managed to pick up at PAX Unplugged.
Thanks to Tasty Minstrel Games for being very, very generous with their copies of Okie Dokie.
Oh man, they had like a wall built out of Okie Dokie boxes because they were just giving them out to anybody who completed a special task.
Yeah.
But it is a fun, cute little cooperative game, and as is true with a lot of cooperative games, it pretty much plays the same whether you got 2 players, 4 players, 5 players.
Right.
So it's a nice little way to, you know, pass 15 or 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So there's lots of other 2-player games out there. If there are 2-player games that you like, or games that are good with 2 players that you like that we didn't mention, I think Raptor is a game that we have never played, but I hear people talk about as a 2-player game. It's an asymmetric 2-player game. Where one player plays as the mama raptor and the other player plays as the scientist.
I see.
Yeah. So if there's any other games that you have played and you really enjoy the 2-player game, there's lots of ways that you can tell us about them. The easiest way is probably to go to our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA or just at FamilyGamersAA.
Yes.
And you can leave a comment on this show post. You can go to our Facebook community. Just go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right there. And you can leave a post in our community as well talking about any games that you might like to play with 2 people.
Or you could tell us on Twitter at FamilyGamersAA.
Check out our website, thefamilygamers.com. On Monday the 19th, our review for Sticky Chameleons goes live. So I think that's the day that this podcast is going to get published anyway. But there is a bunch of links in this review to videos that are totally worth watching.
You should check them out.
One of them involves a famous person, and one of them involves the Family Gamers. That's all I'm going to say.
I'll tease them right now with the title of the review. The review is Sticky Chameleons, More Sticky or More Karma?
Come on, that's a pun.
Karma, chameleon. You come and go.
You come and go.
Yeah.
All right. You got me to sing. Happy.
Woo-hoo!
All right.
In the meantime, don't forget, we're keeping our survey open for about another week and a half till the end of February.
Yep. So if you have not gone to thefamilygamers.com/survey to tell us what you like and don't like about the show
and
the website, why not? We are giving away games from our personal collection to 5 people. Who leave us some survey results. We've gotten some great, great feedback, but that doesn't mean that we don't want yours.
We want more. Give us more!
So please head over to thefamilygamers.com/survey and fill that survey out. It takes you 5 minutes. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. So.
And while you're filling out a survey and telling us what you think about the show, please also don't forget to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe to the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Some of our surveys even said that people found our podcast on those services.
That's amazing. And it just tells me that it's so important to have not just ratings, but also reviews on those services.
To tell people what they're getting into.
Yeah. So I think that's it for this week.
I think we're done.
All right. Until next week.
Play games with your kids. It is episode 84. I am,
Yeah. Yeah, you are.